Thank you for listening to the Following Films podcast. Today I'm joined by Carlson Young to discuss her film, Upgraded. In the film, Anna is a smart and ambitious art enthusiast with dreams of running her own gallery. She is currently paying dues as an unpaid trainee at a premier New York City auction house run by the influential and demanding Claire DuPont. When Anna is sent on her first work trip and gets unexpectedly upgraded to first class, she meets the handsome and well-connected Will, who mistakes Anna for her boss. A white lie that sets off a series of fortuitous events and VIP introductions that suddenly have Anna winning at work and caught up in a whirlwind romance she never expected. However, this little white lie begins to unravel, threatening to ruin Anna's career and newfound romance. But before our conversation with Carlson, I'd like to take a moment to thank our sponsor, Bookmans, an independent bookstore that believes in the magic of storytelling and the cinematic arts. To expand your collection of films, music, or books, visit your nearest Bookmans and discover something truly wonderful. If you haven't already, please follow the Following Films podcast on Spotify to show your support. This will help us to continue to bring you in-depth conversations with the talented individuals who shape the world of cinema. Upgraded is streaming on Amazon Prime, where it's currently the number one film. I had a great time chatting with Carlson about her film, relationships, coming of age, and the enduring romance of Gone Girl. Hey, Carlson, how are you today?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. You as well. Thank you so much for taking time out of your Friday to do this. I really appreciate it.
No problem. Happy to.
Well, congratulations on the film. You've made something that's a little bit deceptive to me. So when I watched this, I read the press notes on it and I was going through it and I kept expecting to see a romantic comedy. But what I really saw was a coming of age story. And so which I was really happy about, because this isn't a story about somebody being fixed by love. This is a story about someone's self-actualization, which I think there's a world of difference between those two things. And is that the intention of the film, or is this just me putting two kind of coming
at this from here? It makes my heart just like melt that you see that. And then that's what you felt in the experience of watching the movie. I worked really hard to weave that in. It was important to me that was my entry point into the material when I first read the script. So I was, you know, really advocating for that and doing my best to make that translate.
Well, it absolutely comes through, because it has some of the sort of tropes, the beats that you would expect in a romantic comedy, but this isn't something that's dependent upon that. This is something that I think you could completely drop those elements from this story and you would still have a compelling narrative here, which is something that if you can do that, it's kind of like a horror film. Is there something there if you drop the genre? And there absolutely is. And it's not that thing.
Thank you. I really appreciate it.
Well, good. So, but that being said, your casting here is so key. Because if you don't have somebody that you want to go on this journey with, that it doesn't work at all. And she's the real deal, man. She's great. So I really enjoyed it. Yeah.
She's amazing. I mean, Camila was attached to play Anna and was executive producing the project when the script came to me. And so I always envisioned her in the role and got to collaborate with her a lot. And she's just such a brilliant and intuitive actress. She has great instincts. So this trust was established very early on. And then it became surrounding her with actors who would bring that out of her. And something she's so phenomenal at doing is playing off of the energy of other actors. So to me, it was just surrounding her with people who've got great comedic instincts that can lure out that the parts of Cammy that I love so much. And once we shot that opening scene and the editor shot me like a really rough cut of it, the whole movie made sense to me. And I knew exactly how I wanted to do it from there on out. And luckily that was pretty early on in our schedule. So
Well, you introduce in the writing of this, her personality and the sort of acerbic wit that she has right off the jump. That's it. And it's the grounding of the piece is really that's the, there's the way that she interacts with the world is really her arc, but that sort of core of who she is remains the same. And she's actually becomes more comfortable in her skin throughout this. And I think that it's really tough to pull off that kind of balance when you have people that are going as broad as like Marissa Tomei goes in this and, yeah. and still have this feel like any sort of a, but it absolutely works though, because it's, she gives such a grounded performance, but at the same time, it's not like she's the straight man in the film either.
Right. Right. And Marissa really swung for the fences in her choices. And yeah. it honestly could have gone either way, but it was making me burst out laughing yeah. on the day. So I decided to trust it. We talked a lot about how broad she wanted to go. And I said, go broad and I'll pull it back in the edit if we need it, you know, if we need to. But then when I got to the edit, I was still crying laughing at her. So I was like, let's keep it. Why not? I mean, it's weird and I like it.
It's so fantastically weird. I adore it. She definitely did swing for the fences with it. That accent. I don't know what the hell that is. But
I don't know either. She said to me, I want to show you an accent she did. And I said, well, where is that from? And she was like, well, I don't know, but why don't we just like make a fucking joke of it? And I was like, I love that choice. Like, she's from Minnetonka, Minnesota, and she's like developed this like pretentious accent to like fit in with the art. It's so silly and I loved it.
It's amazing because it is that kind of thing that actually, weirdly enough, it does mirror Camilla's story, because there's that idea of who we are and being ashamed of kind of not being able to present our authentic selves. And that's, I mean, isn't that really what coming of age is? And sometimes we do it in our 20s, sometimes we do it in our 50s. It really depends on the individual. I'm 47. I'm still coming of age right now. I don't think I still have it all figured out yet. And I don't know that I ever will. So
that's the beautiful part about life, I think. it is a constant, trial by fire and transformation that we are just going through on a daily basis, yearly basis, decade basis, who's to say?
Well, yeah, that's for your own measurement. And a lot of those changes you don't recognize until you've gone through them in retrospect. You can't feel them while you're going through them. Actually, when you're going through them, it feels like hell. And then you look back at it and you go, oh, I see what I was doing. Okay, that makes sense now, which is the benefit of hindsight. But 100%. So then with this film, also something that's really crucial here is the look of the film. I think I can only assume what your budget is. You don't have endless funds to make a film like this, but I do think you're hitting above your weight class with this, because I think the film looks beautiful.
Thank you. I mean, we didn't have near enough time or, you know, resources to do it, you know, at the highest studio level or anything like this. So we had to get really creative, but necessity is the mother of invention. And I learned that with the first film that I did, you know, which was like 25 people in a quarantine camp during COVID in 2020. And I didn't have much at my disposal at all, other than a really fucking great crew. And that's what we had, you know, my DP, Mike Stern for Upgraded. We just talked a lot about what we wanted the aesthetic to be, and we chose locations that would be conducive to that vision.
Well, and I think that it's very smart, because the locations that you're choosing, I'm assuming you weren't doing a lot of redressing in these locations, because choosing places that look like you're just, oh, this is going to add the value just by shooting here. Cause it 100%. Looks
okay. And I constantly, I'm constantly doing that. And that's what I would tell anybody who's making a movie that doesn't have this endless budget. It's like you've got to walk into locations and think, how much do I have to dress this? And it's hopefully minimal.
Well, I'm completely stealing it from Sidney Pollack, because I just read his book last weekend, Making Movies. And that was something he was talking about when you're working on a budget. Just if you're going into a place, what work do you have to do? And just if you know that this place, you don't have to paint it, there you go. That's an advantage to being in that spot, but it's just, you know, making sure that's there, that it's just those things when you're working on a small budget.
Totally. Now,
so as you've kind of moved up the ladder and continue to do that with the projects as they get more ambitious as you're going along, going into the third feature now at this point. Are there things you're taking from that initial 25 crew quarantine lockdown that you think you'll take kind of forever from here on out?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And then of course, Upgraded was its own learning experience. I mean, I'm going into this one. It is so important to have a beginner's mindset every time because you don't know. I mean, these things are, you know, they feel like living, breathing organisms that I am just serving. I'm just here to try to put the puzzle together as best as I can. And I think for the first one, it was like pulling teeth and very bloody and brutal. And then with Upgraded, it was a real education in leadership and understanding how to use my voice on set and how to have this just tons and tons of things going on around me and maintaining, my ground and my vision. You know, we had actors from all parts of the world. It was a very international cast. So everyone's got like a different accent. Everyone's speaking different things. Working in North England, you know, has its own set of kind of work culture that I didn't fully understand. And so I was trying to learn on the go too. So it was just spinning plates. These things are spinning plates. And I'm shooting the next one in Mexico City. So plugging into a new culture again. And I will take every little piece of wisdom because it's all very hard won, you know? It's like, you don't just sit there and like you were saying earlier, you realize things in hindsight. So hopefully we can have a conversation after I finish this production and, and tell you, I don't know.
It's kind of that moment in the morning when you're having your coffee or whatever it is, and you're looking out at the day and you look at your call sheet and you go, fuck, this is actually happening. Okay. Mm-hmm. Now I just have to put on the face. I belong here. I am the person.
And you prep and you prep and you prep, and then you throw it all to the wind.
But that's how you perform as well though, isn't it? You prepare to the point that you can throw it all away so that you're in the moment. You're not making decisions that you made 6 months ago. This episode of the Following Films podcast is brought to you by Bookmans. So today I went into Bookmans and decided to try to find a film by Michael Mann. I went over to the Blu-ray section and saw copies of several films I already own, and then I found it, Black Hat. This is one I haven't seen in quite a while since it came out, and I figured maybe it was time for a reassessment of this much maligned film. So Black Hat is a cyber crime thriller directed by Michael Mann that delves into the world of cybercrime, hacking, and international intrigue. While it promises to be a gripping exploration of the dangers lurking in the digital age, the execution falls short of expectations. The film follows convicted hacker played by Chris Hemsworth, who's temporarily released from prison to help the American and Chinese authorities track down a criminal network that's responsible for a series of major attacks. As the hunt takes them across the globe, Hemsworth's character must navigate the murky waters of the criminal underworld while grappling with his own demons. One of the film's major shortcomings is its lack of technical accuracy and realism. While it attempts to portray the world of hacking authentically, it often falls into cliches and inaccuracies that ultimately undermine the credibility of the story. So the hacking sequences are exaggerated and unrealistic, relying more on flashy visuals than genuine technical expertise. And this is coming from an absolute layman. I am not somebody who knows anything about hacking, and yet I can see some of the things that just flat out aren't true in this film. And that particular disconnect may disappoint viewers familiar with the subject matter or looking for a more grounded portrayal of cybercrime. So despite these flaws though, Black Hat does have its moments. Michael Mann's signature style is evident in the film's beautiful, sleek cinematography and the signature action sequences, and the international setting adds depth to the narrative. It highlights the global nature of cyber threats and the challenges of international cooperation. Chris Hemsworth delivers a solid performance as Hathaway, bringing the character a sense of depth who's grappling for redemption. And the supporting cast includes, I had no idea, I'd completely forgotten this, but Viola Davis, who's really great in the film and adds a lot to the film. But ultimately, Black Hat falls short of its potential. While it offers a glimpse into the world of cybercrime and espionage, its lack of technical accuracy and reliance on cliches detracts from the overall experience. And despite its flaws, fans of Michael Mann's work or of the cyber thriller genre, I guess if you're a huge Johnny Mnemonic fan and you're looking for some more cyber thriller, you could do worse than Black Hat. However, for those seeking a more realistic, nuanced exploration of hacking and cybersecurity, this might leave you wanting more, and I'm not sure I can recommend this one. But despite that, this gave me the chance to check out a film that I've been meaning to reevaluate, because I keep hearing that Black Hat is an underrated film, and maybe I'll give it another 10 years, follow back up with this one, and see if it does end up coming around for me. But remember, Bookmans, they have your cool covered. Hope you enjoy the rest of the show. Thanks.
And how do you keep, because that's so, a film can go wrong so many ways. It can be a death by a million cuts, where in fact, there's so many things that can go wrong. It's kind of a minor miracle that any movie is watchable when you consider all the different things. So there's that part of me that just always says, well, damn, they got it over the finish line. Good for them. And then it's like, then there's the ones that go beyond that. And you're like, wow, they actually made something good. Good for you. And that's yours. You made a really good movie. So it's something to be proud of. And that sort of that thing, when you get that, are you able to appreciate that? Are you able to look at it? Or do you still have that critical eye on yourself when you look at the...
I felt that rush of being really, really happy and proud of what we made when I finished the edit, like, but that was a year and a half ago, you know? So it's like, it's just a delay. It feels very, I don't feel anything now about it. I feel numb, like so much so that I'm like, is this like a bout of apathy or like what's going on? I don't really feel anything now, but I'm grateful that it's resonating with people, because that you never know. Like, I'll always be proud of my babies, but I mean, you never know where culture is going to be when something comes out. And I think for people to really, you know, be like liking what you put down is like the stars aligning. So I don't take that for granted.
Well, it's, I mean, that's any creative experience is that no matter what you're doing, if you go back and you read Don Quixote at the beginning of it, Cervantes says that this is a flawed work. This is something, but it's still, it's my child and I love my child. I see the flaws. I know what's wrong with this. You're not going to get ahead of me. I see it, but I love it anyway. Here you go. Yeah. Take it on and enjoy it. I mean, happen to have made one of the most well-regarded works of all time, but at the same time, I think that's somewhere. It's what you hear and what you focus on. And when you look at it, you say, if I could go back and change the one thing, I would do it. But then sometimes those things that go wrong can be the things that really resonate with people, that people end up loving. And it's so weird how that happens. It's the flaws. It's the broken nose that makes somebody handsome sometimes. It's just, you never know.
Oh, I love that. Thank you. I'm really going to be thinking about that this weekend.
Well, I mean, I've been married for 15 years now. So I know when me and my wife, there's like that beginning part of our story, which is what romantic comedies are usually based on, which is the infatuation phase. And very few films that are romance films, that are love stories, are actually about anything past that first 2 years, for the most part. They're not about what actual love is. They're romantic, but they're not love stories. And I find that we're in just dire need for more stories about actual love.
Oh, my God. Oh, my heart. I have the perfect, I know the story that is the love story that I'll tell.
Yeah.
I do.
I know you can't give away those kinds of things, but do you have an idea of a story that's actually a, so.
I've been looking for a love story like this, and it came to me in this incredibly magical way.
Yeah.
And it's this like, I won't give anything away or even say the title. It's this, it has its roots in this Mayan epic. And it is the only thing I've ever read that I said, that is the most beautiful love story I've ever read. And
that's wonderful.
It spans time and space. It's just gorgeous.
Oh, that's amazing. Okay, I'm excited for that.
But it might be 20 years from now. Like, I don't know, but we'll just see.
Okay, so I'm going to run something by you. To me, one of the most... you're married, right? I think?
Yes. Okay. Yes, 7 years.
Okay, so good. You're past that part I was talking about. So you see the warts and you know it and you accept it and you've gotten past... Yeah. Good. So then, to me, one of the most authentic love stories I've ever seen is Gone Girl. Because I think that it is truly about two people that are left to their own devices. They're kind of animals. One of them is a deadbeat that's on the couch playing video games, and the other one's a murderer. And so, but when they're together, they have to learn how to behave to make each other work, and they're better people as a couple together. And to me, that's how I feel about my wife, where it's something that I know left to my own. I know what I was for the first 30 years of my life before her, and I know who I want to be, who I'm inspired to be, because I'm with her. And some people will say the authentic self is that person before. And I actually disagree with that. I think that there's the person you aspire to be is probably more authentic in my estimation.
I could not be more in agreement with you. And I you're even saying this to me. Sorry, my telephone is ringing. Okay, it's done. I mean, that's such a profound truth about partnership.
Yeah.
That people really just sleep on. It's like, no. I was an animal, and we're here before I met my husband. And we, I believe that we are here on this earth to grow and evolve and be more than a lizard brain. And, that's something extremely beautiful about marriage.
Well, it's the gamble. It's that I really like this person today, but I'm pretty sure that I'm going to be crazy about this person 20 years from now, 30 years from now, 40 years from now, when all the aesthetics and things that got you in the door in the first place, all their cool haircuts and all that bullshit that doesn't mean anything. You know, when you see a 70-year-old couple walking down the street, you don't look at them and think through those eyes anymore. You just see people holding hands walking down the street. And there's something, there's a life shared experience that I aspire to personally. So,
yeah, me too.
Sorry for going down all this.
I love it. I'm happy that a rom-com could inspire conversations.
Well, I think that's the difference. So I don't necessarily, again, to get back to my original point, that I don't think this is a rom-com in a traditional sense. I do feel like you've made something about self-actualization, which especially for a movie about young women is so important, because I think that we tell a lot of stories about men coming to their own, but we don't tell a lot of stories about women coming into their own without a man. And I don't know, you know, as a dad, I'd kind of like to see more of those stories.
Yeah, because Anna, she invites the love in that she's ready for. And by the end of the film, is like she's at a place where Will is additive to her life. He is not making it, you know, he's not. And I thought that was so important. It's just, that was the interesting part about the story to me. Like, I'm like, we all know what it's like to like go to, you know, maybe a new city and have a fling and have this like really like fun and, you know, sexy time where you like think this could last forever, but it's you got to choose yourself every time you do. And I think it's important for women to hear that message. And then I also think that the flip side of that I felt, you know, in the ending was that you could claw your way to the top. You can get to a place in your career that you are really, you know, proud of finally, but have this hole that could be filled with lots of kinds of love, family love, friendship love, and in Anna's case, romantic love, but it's love all the same. Oh. And yeah, that was a beautiful thing to find in the movie.
Well, the idea of aspirations that's so important to teach, you know, our kids and to take into yourself is that when you get to that mountaintop and you get to that peak and you see it, all you're going to see is other mountaintops from the top of it. The goals don't stop. The ambition doesn't stop because of that. So you have to learn to embrace the process and the learning and the pain and the heartache and the beauty. And you have to learn to accept the daily of it, the grind part of it, because that's where the true beauty and grace is to me. And yeah, so yes, I think that this is a film that speaks to those things in a small, non-preachy, non-soapbox kind of way. But this is the type of film that I want to show my little boys, you know, my 13-year-old, my 8-year-old boy, because I want them to understand a part of a woman's journey. And so, and I think it's important to expose them to that stuff.
You are a good dad.
No. I fuck up all the time. I get it wrong all the time.
It's just beautiful, the fuck ups. But I mean, just to hear like this, what I hear when you're speaking is this like really pure masculinity, and it makes my heart like just explode. So yeah, I'm happy that you exist in the world.
I appreciate that. It's a non-traditional masculinity that took me a long time to embrace, because it was not the football playing masculinity that I think my dad would have wanted. It became more of the theater nerd masculinity that was okay with that.
My husband's like that too. It's weird, because like you almost have to like do a double take when you see it. Like, I think as, I mean, you're like, I'm like, are you real? But I cannot tell you how important you are. People like you. Yes. It's a very good brand of masculinity.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. Carlson, it was so nice to meet you, and congratulations on the film. I'm glad it's resonating with people, and hopefully we'll get to chat after the next one.
Absolutely. Bye.
Okay. Take care. Nice to meet you.
Time enough to figure you out. Time enough to write this down. Wish me luck, give me hope. Yeah.
voice crack.